The new pagans are coming, and they're bringing hell with them. What do Barack Obama, Joe Biden, and Hillary Clinton have in common? They all passionately believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. So what the heck happened? Tonight, I asked Bishop Athanasius Schneider about the long revolution and the plot to cancel Christian morality.
Is it heresy, Your Excellency?
Well...
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Michael Mann. This is The Remnant Underground. I want to share with you a little clip that someone just sent me the other day, which reminds me a lot of the way things used to be, even when I was a kid, and certainly for the past 1,000 years or so. It also reminds me of what we're fighting for, and that is the visible evidence or proof of God and His church with us in a society gone insane. Check this out.
How you doing, Father? Pretty good.
Where are you headed?
Home.
You getting home?
After riding in the rain all freaking day.
Do not. God, your Father, and Holy Spirit.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Give a honk for the church, okay?
Yes, thank you.
All right.
God bless. Boy, that was a moment. Doesn't get better than that. Thank you. I'll take anything I can get.
There is just something so beautifully Catholic about that moment. And it reminds us of what we've lost, you know, the reminders of Christ with us. And I remember this from when I was young, even, you know, 30, 40 years ago still, you saw priests in airports wearing cassocks. They had the charity to wear cassocks in airports. And so you'd run up and ask for a quick confession before you jumped on a plane, that kind of thing. But the presence of Christ with us, of His church with us, that's what's so missing in the world today. That's what we're fighting to restore. And just the rapport between the guy on the motorcycle and the cool priest in the cassock, just out there ready to talk, ready to give blessing. You see, that's the main thing that's missing from the world today, is the presence of Christ among us. And that's what's so sad about what they've done to the Catholic Church. Because everything that is happening, friends, and sometimes I think it's difficult for people maybe who are new to this show or new to traditional Catholicism or just, you know, starting to put it all together to really figure out what's going on here. Because everything that is happening is in the church and in the state is part of a long revolution against God that goes back a long way into an assault on the Christian confessional states. It's been a long time. It took a long time to deconstruct Christendom. And we're just on the far edges of it now. They're almost done with this thing, right? And if you don't understand the context, it's easy to kind of lose track of what we're supposed to do. Because what we're supposed to do under all circumstances is make sure that there's no way that we will ever become part of that long revolution. It'll be sucked in by fear or anything else into contributing to their agenda, to their end game. What they want, friends, what they want is for every one of us to lose it, to lose the focus, lose the plot, become one of them out of fear. And that's this big concern, because now we're down to abortion. That's the last straw. That's the last thing. That's life itself, right? Someone has to keep the light burning. Someone has to stay strong on this issue no matter what. Even if we have to suffer for it, somebody has to keep the faith. Because as we keep saying, the fight for life is basically just a stand-in for the fight for the rights of God. That's all it is. He is the author of life. So somebody has to be willing to suffer for that. Suffer for God, suffer for life, sacrifice for it. Otherwise, this world turns into an Orwellian nightmare as the living dead quite literally take over, not just for the next 4 years, but for the rest of our lives. And that's what we are talking about. Not November, not 4 years, but for the rest of our lives. And all you have to do to see what happens when a society gives up on the unborn, when they completely, there's nobody left defending the unborn, nobody left, no political power left in a country that's willing to stand up for the unborn, the most innocent. All you have to do to see where that leads is look, in our case, just a bit north of the border to the country of Canada.
Hello.
Thank you for
nice
seeing
to meet
me.
You.
You too. Should we do hands and whatever? Are we very formal or do we not? I don't know.
We don't need to be formal, but we also don't need to touch hands.
Fine, good. So you do this work actually here? Sometimes.
Most people want to die in their own homes.
Yeah.
And so I would be in their home. And of course, many people are in hospital, in hospice, in care homes. And then there are people who don't feel comfortable dying at home. For example, they don't want their spouse to have to deal with their memory of them dying in their home. So then they come here, and this is a recliner. And so people recline here, and they can snuggle up with their loved ones if they want. And so it's a good place for some people. Mm-hmm.
How many maid deaths have you been involved with?
Over 400.
Okay. That sounds like a lot. Is that what you do now?
I still run a contraception and abortion clinic in addition to my maid work.
Now that right there, I don't know what you guys think. That might be the most terrifying clip I've ever seen. That's not in a movie. That's not a movie. That's a doctor. That's a Canadian doctor. Just positively giddy over the prospect of killing people, euthanizing people. And then she comes right out and says, well, my side gigs are abortion and, you know, contraception or whatever. It's just, there's where it leads. So right now in the States, the issue is abortion. What kind of compromise are we all willing, compromise on life, are we willing to justify under this lesser of two evils argument? And again, ultimately, the big concern is the long revolution down the road, because abortion, this is the last hill for us. 100 years ago, we know what it was. It wasn't abortion. Nobody was talking about abortion. Remember? 100 years ago, the issue was what? I don't know. Pick your favorite. But I remember one of the big ones was contraception. Remember that? Now, the Lambeth Conference of Anglican Bishops in 1930, a long time ago, was the first time a major Protestant denomination officially approved the use of contraception. So you might think, well, that was going on for 1,000 years. No, it wasn't. That's very recent that we decided contraception was okay, and thus began separating the act, the procreative act, from the consequences, from the result, which is, you know, the act from, the separating the pleasure of the act from the purpose of the act, which is conception, right? Procreation, education of children. That was a major, major revolution. Nobody even talks about it anymore, do they? But after that, 1930, every denomination, every Christian denomination, just one after another fell off, followed suit, one after the other, except for one. Because in the same year, 1930, long time ago, Pope Pius XI issued an encyclical called Casti Connubi on Christian marriage, which condemned artificial birth control and abortion, and reaffirmed the sanctity of marriage way back in 1930. The encyclical declared that contraception was a violation of God's law and the law of nature. And guess what? The entire Catholic world complied. They obeyed the Holy Father even on issues that dealt with how they behaved behind the closed doors of their own bedrooms. That was the role the church was playing in the lives of millions and millions and millions of Catholics worldwide. And that's what had to be gotten rid of. That's what had to be destroyed. So then comes Vatican II and the whole revolution in the church, and Humanae Vitae, which was about contraception, comes along and barely, but finally does more or less reaffirm the teaching, the infallible teaching of the church, the constant teaching of the church, but too late, because this is now a post-conciliar Catholic church, in which most people didn't care, even the bishops. Now, I can still remember when contraception actually really still mattered, you know? Just like I remember, and I know many of you do, you remember when divorce was still an issue, right? It was still an impediment. Remember this? Who was the first president of the United States to be divorced? Easy question, right? Because there was only been two. Donald Trump is one. The first one was Ronald Reagan. First one to enter office divorced. When he ran for the presidency as a divorced man, faithful Catholics were divided. I mean, really divided, whether or not they should vote for Ronald Reagan because his wife Nancy was his second wife. Well, look where we are today. Who cares? Anybody worrying about the marital state of any politician? No. Anybody worried about a politician's position on contraception? Ah, who cares, right? But it was a big moral dilemma for Catholics even as late as the 1980s, early 1980s. So you see what's happening. The reality, friends, is that there's no putting the moral genie back in the bottle on any of these issues. Once it happens, Once contraception is approved, once divorce is approved, once abortion is approved, you're not putting it back. It's never coming back. Politics just marches on. So contraception and divorce were just two steps in the long revolution's march to a post-Christian New World Order. That's what we're looking at right now with this whole idea of compromising over abortion at this point. The good guy's doing it. And if you want more proof, let's use the example of gay marriage, marriage itself, just marriage, and the definition of marriage. Because I think even young people in this audience will remember when it was the Democrats who were out there insisting that marriage is between one man and one woman. Even Barack Obama thought that was the case.
What I believe is that marriage is between a man and a woman.
Why? What in your religious faith calls you to be against gay marriage?
What I believe in my faith is that a man and a woman, when they get married, are performing something before God, and it's not simply the two persons who are meeting.
Now, isn't that something? Back in the day, not very long ago at all the radicals held that marriage is between one man and one woman.
Marriage is between a man and a woman, and states must respect that. Nobody's violated that law. There's been no challenge to that law. Why do we need a constitutional amendment? Marriage is between a man and a woman.
Yep, they all agreed.
I believe that marriage is not just a bond, but a sacred bond between a man and a woman. It exists between a man and a woman going back into the mists of history as one of the foundational institutions of history and humanity and civilization.
So here's my question for you. What happened to that? I mean, we've gone from that to you can marry your German shepherd if you want and call it marriage. What happened? So even up until, Obergefell in 2015, all the conservatives were absolutely defending marriage as one man and one woman, remember? That was like a basic staple of the conservatives at Fox News, for example. One, of course, married one man, absolutely. So here's another question for you then. When's the last time you heard Sean Hannity or Ann Coulter or Bill O'Reilly, even Laura Ingraham, defend marriage as between one man and one woman? Conservatives are not even allowed to object to gay adoption anymore. They're actually handing kids over. You got conservatives on Fox News who are married and have children, and they are telling us what conservatism means in this country. You know? It's incredible how fast it's gone. And if they condemn abortion at all now, these conservatives, it's most often late-term abortion. And even they're even almost moving away from that. They're saying, well, the baby's born, and then they're killing it on the table. That's we're against that. They're almost moving beyond even just late-term abortion to outright infanticide is the thing they're going to take the stand on, you know, against. What's this mean? It means, once again, that the long revolution is advancing. And someone, somewhere, has got to stand up and make sure it doesn't get any further. Because what's the takeaway? The takeaway is that conservative politics is built on shifting sands, friends. And without the rock of an unchanging Christian morality, every moral, political absolute is in flux right now. You see? And this is why the long revolution had to destroy the Catholic Church first. It had to take the moral foundations out so everything is just in flux. Whatever you want it to be, whatever the people want. And all the people are going through public school education where they come out with no Christian morality at all. So Christian morality is just disappearing by the generation to the point now where it's almost gone, to the point now where even conservatives are saying, well, we got to get busy on this abortion thing. We gotta be open-minded here. You know, abortion is just going to be a reality for us now. All right, there's nothing we can do about it. Can you believe what's happening? But in order to get here, the long revolution had to undermine Christian morality first. Had to eliminate the church's political influence by discrediting her moral authority.
Several synod cardinals chose to attend a synod event hosted by Father James Martin at the Jesuit headquarters, promoting homosexual love. Cardinal Stephen Chow, the Bishop of Hong Kong, offered a prayer during the event, which later featured married gay couples giving testimony on behalf of LGBTQ Catholics. This is Chow's prayer.
Yeah, you know, when I read that prayer, it really struck me that you're praying that we may overcome our ignorance and prejudices. But to profess that we need to overcome our ignorance and our prejudices really, to me, is code for we've got to overcome our Catholic doctrine, our Catholic practice.
Yeah, no, this is a sign of the auto-destruction of the church. As Bob points out, Catholic morality is not a prejudice and it's not a form of ignorance. It's revealed in the scriptures. It's taught by the natural law. It's quite clear. If you read St. Paul, you'll understand why sodomy is wrong. This is an offense against God.
And that's why we need to be really, really careful, friends. We got to be really careful because they're using fear very effectively to cause us to sort of go along with this. We can't go along with this. Someone has to stand and stay back and not let them cajole us and terrify us into the total sellout of the Christian moral reality. Because right now, this long revolution is trying to come up with all sorts of creative ways of forcing all of us to join them, to go along with it. And once we allow these moral and spiritual issues to be defined by politics, there's no going back, friends. You don't get to go back up and start over. Oh, we're going to go back and be pro-life after we get... No. It never works that way. Well, we got to compromise on abortion so we can get in, and then we're going to be super pro-life. No, we're not. It has never, not once, has it been where a politician compromised on a moral issue, went into office, and then became moral again, went back to the good way, with the good guys. It never, ever happens that way. Once you compromise in politics, it's permanent. And once we then, as the folks being carried along in this flood, once we hand them over the power, the politicians, we hand it to them to make these determinations, it is all over for us. It is over for us. The Orwellian future will become our present, our reality, under the terms of a Faustian bargain that in the long term makes us water carriers for the long revolutionaries. That's what we're doing here. That's what we're fighting against. That's the concern here. Not in a few months, not a four-year election thing. That's not the thing anymore. It's the long-term ramifications of what's happening to our society. It's happening to all of us. Now, I've gone over that a lot over the past few months, and as I say, thank you so much for hearing us out on this and for being willing to have this conversation. But there is good news. There's really good news. If you're still here, if you're still listening to what I'm saying right now, despite the fear you feel inside, which we all feel, the fear in our heart that something terrible is going to happen in a few months, right, to our country. If you're still here, you know what it means? And this is so important. If you're still listening, if you're still having this conversation, it means you still care, which means you've kept the faith, which means you hold your faith as something more important to you than merely saving your skin. Because the whole push right now is in order to save your skin, you got to jump back. You got to pull back from those moral issues, those issues of faith, those issues of God, right? So if you're not willing to do that, this is wonderful, beautiful confirmation that you're in the right place. This is an important confirmation for all of us, in fact. How important is God to us still after all these years of the church missing in action and revolution in the church and in the state, right? How important is God still? Just something for Sunday morning, or is he still vitally important to our lives every single moment of every single day? What matters more to us right now, saving our souls or saving our bodies? These are the questions we have to ask, friends. And I'm not trying to be judgmental to anyone or suggest that you're not adequately asking them. But in the middle of this hail, this maelstrom, this war, this controversy, this confusion, it's easy to lose track of what really matters and what defines us and what we believe. So we got to sit back and we got to ask these questions, which is what we've been doing the last few weeks, right? A few months. These are big questions, but we need to ask them. Why? Because the long revolution can actually be stopped. It's been stopped in the past, and it can be stopped again. It can be derailed. It can be derailed even by the little people. That's you and me. We can derail it. You know, the folks who are willing to suffer in order to be witnesses to Christ. You know what the word martyr actually means? It comes from the Greek, martyr, which means witness. It means witness. So the early Christians, what were they doing? They were bearing witness to their faith. They were willing to suffer, even to die, because of what they believed. And the question that we have before us now is, are we ready to do the same? Do we have what it takes? Or have we been so scandalized by the apostasy in the church that we're just basically becoming part of the revolution? It's a terrifying thought. Are we becoming like them? Are we becoming them? But to even ask the question, let alone answer it, we as Catholics, we have to understand the principles that are at stake. The principles, much more important than the politics. It's the principles that matter. What do we believe? That's what matters. And that's what I want to do with the rest of the show tonight. I want to hand it over to someone who can help us answer those questions, to a bishop who was born under Soviet repression, by the way, born to Catholic parents. He was raised in a Catholic underground. Bishop Schneider's parents were imprisoned in the Gulag. Did you know that? Bishop Schneider's grandfather was murdered by the Soviet regime. Did you know that? He and his family had to travel long distances under the cover of darkness just to go to Mass. He made his first communion in secret. He knows what it means to suffer. He knows what it means to be under a regime. And he knows how important it is to keep the faith. That's more important than anything else, is to keep the faith in the darkness of the Gulag. That's how you survive it. That's how you come out the other side. That's how you defeat the regime. And Bishop Schneider's family, like so many Catholic families in those days under Soviet occupation, they chuckle at us when we say, well, who are we going to vote for? Because you know what? They could not, in those Catholics under that regime, could not in good conscience vote for anybody. And it didn't matter who was running. It was just another communist of a different stripe. So you couldn't, in good conscience, as a Catholic, vote for any of them. You know? And Bishop Schneider, I think, can tell that those days might be coming again, not only here in the States, but in Europe, it's already there. And so, for example, when the Amazon Synod was raging, Bishop Schneider fearlessly comes out with his book, Christus Vincit, which means Christ Conquers, which he launched during the Amazon Synod in Rome, just down the street from the Vatican. I was there. Now follow me on this, because this is important. This is such a hopeful realization when you really think about what some of these men are doing, the risks that they're taking. Because it was just a little later on then that Bishop Schneider wrote a catechism. I think I've got a copy of it right here. This catechism, which he launched. He comes out and launches this catechism on the last day of the 2023 Synod on Synodality, once again in Rome. Once again, I was there. This has been translated into many languages, reaffirming the constant teaching of the Church for people who are deceived, faithful Catholics who are being deceived or running the risk of being deceived all over the world. And this faithful shepherd comes out and says, this is what you need. This is what Christ wants you to know. This is the true teaching of the Church, no matter what you're hearing from anywhere else in the Church right now. This is truth. When Francis went to Singapore and began claiming that all religions are pathways to God, Bishop Schneider fearlessly comes out, releases his proclamation of faith at the Catholic Identity Conference with cameras running. That thing has been translated into something like 15 languages, and it's all over the world right now. This is the truth, Your Holiness. And he's not alone. Bishop Schneider has allies, has friends in the hierarchy, bishops and cardinals all over the place who stand with him, not all of them publicly, I suppose, but many of them do publicly, even though still he's unafraid to stand with us, which can be a liability for some of these guys. We can't stand with those outspoken lay people because they say too much, right? He stands with the little people. He encourages the little people. He tells them to stay in the church. He shows them how to stay in the church. He shows them how to be loyal opposition, right? We're all abandoned sheep, you know, and he comes into our midst, a breathing, walking reminder that Christ meant exactly what he said in Matthew 28:20, I am with you always, even unto the consummation of the world. There he is, Bishop Schneider, right? So I want to close to that. I had the opportunity to sit down again with His Excellency last week, and I want to close my show this week by giving you Bishop Athanasius Schneider. He will be the last word tonight. And I would ask you, please, to pray for this good and holy bishop and to do as I do. Get down on your knees every night and thank God every night for Bishop Athanasius Schneider.
We just had the pleasure of listening to His Excellency Bishop Emmanuel Badejo from Nigeria, whom you know. His Excellency spoke at length about the pro-life movement in Africa, and it was very exciting to hear how strong and vibrant the pro-family, pro-God, pro-life movement is. In fact, it's getting stronger there. And it reminded me, turning to something a little more sad, a statement recently by the Holy Father in which he was talking about American politics, and he made a statement that confused a lot of people where he said he thought that a candidate who wanted to have closed borders, who wanted to have, you know, a legal way of welcoming immigrants, that was just as evil as a pro-abortion candidate. And I wonder if I could get, why would that be something that wouldn't be very easy to distinguish, abortion being intrinsically evil? I wonder why he saw those two things as, or he sees those as equally evil.
I think we must be simply a common sense, because it's against common sense and evidence. We cannot confuse intrinsic evil, like killing innocent children or unborn children, with protecting your country.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you cannot put this at the same level. It is against evidence, against logics, and is relativizing the evil itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems probably there's such a statement is probably made for political, with political intentions. And the church shepherds must not do political statements. They must preach the truth in clarity, without any ambiguity, and with the firmness with which the apostles in the church always taught.
Mm-hmm. I know you as a bishop would hesitate to comment on anything specific about politics. I won't insult you by asking you about specifics in politics. But just generally speaking, on principle, there are some who believe that that things are getting so bad in the world now that they may have to make a choice in which basically violates conscience. They may have to vote for someone who's actually overtly pro-abortion in order to protect themselves from someone who's even more pro-abortion. And I wonder if you could say something. At what point do we as Christians have to be open to the possibility that we may have to have, we may have to be somewhat heroic in actually not having a way of voting our way out of persecution? When does that point arrive where we can face that harsh reality?
Yes, I think that as the example you mentioned, that two politicians, one is for, both are for abortion. I mean, both are for killing innocent children, for intrinsic evil. The one is maybe more in a more extensive manner, and the other in a less. But both are basically promoting an intrinsic evil, a horrible thing. And so we are witnessing when we have no more alternatives in political life to vote for a candidate who really respects natural law, at least, then we cannot collaborate in such a system. Then we are in some way in a new pagan society where we are Christians, a minority, and where we are called to be at least simple, clear witnesses of the truth, of our convictions. Of course, it's not everyone called to martyrdom, but at least I think it's a basic requirement to be a true Christian, the courage. Courage to witness the truth, even to the extent of some negative consequences in your life. But God will recompense it, even here on earth. And this was always the way which the Christians lived. We have the example in the first centuries, in the midst of a society, of pagan society, who were persecuting and hating Christians. And in other occasions, like the English martyrs, who did not take the oath of supremacy because of conscience. This was also a political issue in some way, to give your voice, to acknowledge the King of England as the head of the church in England. It was against the Catholic faith, against the conscience, and they preferred to be persecuted, to live even in poverty, and even to give their lives. Mm-hmm. The most luminous example is St. Thomas More.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He could have spared himself. He could have saved his life by simply going along with the system, but he at some point realized he couldn't do it. I have a follow-up question on that. You were very outspoken toward the end of the COVID period when it came to the COVID vaccinations. And your concern with that at the time was the cooperation between the manufacturers of the vaccines with the abortion industry. And you, I think, in my opinion, courageously said, we can't go along with this. And I want to ask you, you've already commented quite a bit on that, but I want to ask you, now it seems like there's a similar thing happening politically where everyone is being asked one way or another, you know, I'm talking about the good people now, are being asked to contribute to the slaughter of the innocents. And do you believe there's a connection, almost like in the old days, you mentioned the days of the Caesars, where they had to have a pinch of incense, the Christians, and say, Caesar is Lord, to prove their fidelity. Is it possible that the blood of babies now, the blood of the unborn, is like the same pinch of incense that the Christians were asked in the early days? Is this really a demonic thing having to do with the rejection of God by rejecting life?
I think yes. I am agreeing with this example you mentioned, that we cannot really, as Christians, contribute in a way to such a horrible system, systematic killing, industry even, of killing innocent children, or the abortion industry, which is growing, and another industry intrinsically linked to this is the so-called fetal industry, with the horrible experiments of killed babies, and so on. And now when we are asked to give our voice, our vote, for people who promote or say, I guarantee that there will be the right of abortion, we cannot contribute to this. And or when a politician says there will be a right, I will promote so-called same-sex homosexual marriages, we cannot vote for this. And with our vote, with our voice, in some way, we contribute for this system of intrinsic evil in the society. And we must give a witness. And maybe our witness as Catholics to refuse such actions and systems in the social life and political life will encourage other people, even of goodwill, of common sense, who are not Catholics, maybe other Christians, and even not Christians, non-Christians. So I think we must build up a kind of alliance of all people who respect natural law, who have still the common sense, and to build up a true human society respecting the law of God.
Mm-hmm. In this time of such political unrest, it's difficult to hold the politicians to a certain line of moral or natural law or God's law when it seems to be there's such confusion coming from the very top of the Catholic Church. For example, what happened in Singapore. I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yes, it is very sad and regrettable that Pope Francis made such statements which are openly contradicting the first commandment of God, when he stated all religions are ways or path to God. This is a direct contradiction to the first commandment. It is a contradiction to the entire gospel, to Jesus Christ is the only way to the Father, the only way, the only Savior. It is relativizing with this affirmation, the unicity, uniqueness of the way which God commanded humankind. Mm-hmm. It's not for choice. God commanded all human beings, first the Jews and then all. This is my beloved son. Listen to him. Mm-hmm. This is a divine commandment. And therefore, it is very confusing that the Pope made such statements, and we have to continue to be faithful to what the Church always taught, that there is no other way to salvation. Mm-hmm. This is a divine word. We cannot twist it. We cannot undermine it with rhetorics or tricks or other means of sophisms. We must proclaim clearly there is no other way for salvation. There is no other religion willed by God than faith in Jesus Christ, the incarnate Son of God, the only Savior of mankind.
Mm-hmm. That's beautifully stated. Do you think there's any... I know you have a statement that you've issued now that you will be issuing on the internet to the Holy Father, addressed to the Holy Father, in this situation. Is there any reason to hope that maybe some good may come and maybe there will be a retraction or he'll recant? Or
we have always the hope. Mm-hmm. And this is the best what we can do in this situation towards the Pope or the other bishops who imitate him in proclaiming such affirmations contradicting divine revelation. Mm-hmm. It is an invitation for him, to him. It's really a sign of truly love for him to ask him, invite him prayerfully, humbly, charitably to retract such statements.
Is it heresy, Your Excellency?
Well, it is the divine word. And when you contradict divine word, mm-hmm. it is heresy. It's a divine revealed truth. Mm-hmm. And when you... Well, it is not a direct formal, I would say, heresy. When he would say, Jesus Christ is not the only way mm-hmm. to salvation, this will be a formal direct heresy. Mm-hmm. But this expression is an implicit denial of mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. Very clear denial, but implicit. Mm-hmm. And so it is a contradiction and an error and material, I would say, heresy de facto, but not formal according to the canon law. Mm-hmm. Because for canon law to be really a heresy, it must be of people who are guilty of heresy, they must proclaim this with obstinacy, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in an obstinate manner. Mm-hmm. And it's not, I think, the case here. And so therefore we have to pray, to hope that Pope Francis will receive from God the light, the illumination, mm-hmm. to retract it, to state again what the first Pope, Peter, did, saying, there is no other name given under heaven to humankind in which they can be saved except the name of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he would proclaim this in the entire world, we then could say, through Francis Pope Peter, this is the task of every pope, which God gave him, it's a divine task, to confirm all in faith, not to confuse in faith, but to confirm, to strengthen in faith, in clarity. And this is, at the same time, one of the greatest acts of charity and love for the neighbor, to transmit him the divine truth, which alone sets men free, frees them from any slavery, ideological slavery and other slaveries, and to provide them, to transmit to them the authentic, true joy.
Mm-hmm.
Without truth, we cannot have a real joy, real happiness. And only the acceptance of the divine truth, of divine will guide us and lead us into heaven. And this is our way, and this is for this we were created, to be with God in heaven, to know him, not in a confusing manner, to know God, not in an ambiguous manner, but in a clear manner, maybe even, I would say, crystal clear, even though it remains a mystery always, but in clarity. And to knowing God and knowing him in a right manner, to love him in a right manner, and loving him, adoring him in a right manner. So knowing him rightly, loving him rightly, adoring him rightly, then to achieve the aim for which we were created, the eternal life with God in eternal happiness.
You're up against so many problems in the church today, in the hierarchy of which you are a part, and yet you always seem to have a joy yourself. You don't seem to be depressed by this. You just seem to push ahead. Thank you for doing that, and I don't understand how you do that, but your joy and your willingness to be outspoken is a great consolation to us, and it gives us the joy and the courage to continue. So thank you for all that you're doing for us. Thank you.